The focus of our series on sharing of life stories and empowerment tonight has as its separate or special focus crises and hard times. It's been really exciting this week to see all of the things that are coming together, all the mutual reinforcement of ideas, sessions that we've been at and sessions that others have mentioned that they have been attending. And so tonight, as you have things that ring a bell or make a connection with something that you have heard or talked about someplace else that fits in, please contribute that so that we can encourage this this cross-fertilization which is happening in the village. The topic of crises and hard times is one which some research has shown is very much a way in which people can find connections with one another in our church congregations. And so tonight what we'd like to do is to do really two things. Talk a little bit about a theoretical background, a framework for thinking about the sharing of life stories, and then to do some talking with one another about things that you might feel comfortable talking about, whatever you feel comfortable talking about, with one another, and then have some time to reflect a bit about the sharing of life stories and our own experiences together. So instead of making a list of what crises or hard times mean, for us to do that, why don't we see if we can come up with a set of a list of some concrete crises and hard times, rough spots in the road that come to mind, so that we have something concrete to deal with for our consideration. These are things that you may have experienced yourself or have heard someone else has experienced or is going through, or yourself that you may be experiencing or going through. I'd like to ask you to think for about a minute of people that come to mind and experiences that come to mind of people who have experienced some of the rough spots, the tough times of life, and try to give them a name. What would you call that, what they've gone through? What is it that they've been going through? And then if we could just have you pick one or two of the ones that you've been thinking about, and we'll put them up on the board so that we can have a chance to reflect on those for just a moment. So just think for a little bit about what you might title the rough time or crises that you would name in your own experience that either you yourself have or perhaps are experiencing or someone that you know about.
Divorce.
Okay. Another one.
Change of life.
And that could be a lot of different kinds, right?
Okay, good.
Including career.
Okay, including career change.
And the preface to that, discontent.
Discontent, okay.
Attempting suicide.
Or successful.
Yeah.
Or successful.
Okay. Maybe like suicide of family or friends?
Yeah. Okay.
Financial reverses. Like
financial reverses.
Being sued.
Okay. Financial reverses. Being sued. Okay.
Death of a child.
Death of a child.
Or
Or parent.
Or parent.
I was going to say aging parent.
Parents. Aging parents. Okay. Crises or hard times that come to mind that someone that we know or perhaps ourselves has experienced or is experiencing as a way of getting some concrete ideas of what we're considering.
I added in a few other significant deaths, different, but I think very important. How about
others?
Being told you don't matter.
I'm sorry?
Being told you don't matter.
Being told you don't matter. Okay, I should say that when I ask people to repeat, I have a hearing loss from some industrial explosions I was involved in one time. And I just really have named the summer myself as a result of going through a hearing test. And so I have a drop off at the consonant sounds at about, so I hear about 1/64th of the consonants. So I'm going to do something about that and get a hearing aid so I can hear those, but I don't yet. So I'll probably say, what? And that's why, because I just plain lost some of those consonants.
And I put that down as one of those losses too, like an amputation or, you know, loss of hearing or something, can be a blow to the ego.
Okay.
Stress.
Others.
Chronic pain.
Chronic pain.
Okay.
Probably too wide, but for lack of time, to make it too specific. Addiction.
Addictions.
Okay.
Really helpful, really concrete.
And, Bruce, you mentioned one this afternoon. Like post-war stress, right? Post-combat stress. How would you like to term that?
I think that that's too specific. Delayed stress.
Delayed stress. Okay. Anybody have another one that they'd like to get up here to upload?
Is illness up there?
Guilt, illness, okay.
And affluence, yeah. And illness, guilt.
Guilt.
Yeah, that can certainly fatigue a person, wear out a person.
Okay.
A move.
Okay. Loss of a house through flood or fire.
Natural disaster as a category.
Okay.
Depression.
Okay. And are you thinking of the kind that the whole country went through?
No, I was thinking
depression.
The one psychological depression pushed through.
Okay.
Be a category in the recovery.
Discrimination for all sorts of reasons.
Something that relates a lot to small business, cash flow crisis.
Okay. I guess there even would be happy crises like the birth of a child, marriage. That is a stress. It may not be a crisis, but.
It's a crisis.
It can be. Any others you think of our children or grandchildren and some of their the things we worry about in that generation?
Playground bullies.
Peer pressure.
We've had no trouble coming up with perhaps over 20 different categories, and I'm sure we could keep going on more. Maybe we ought to try to clump them in some way.
Sure. do they seem to fall into some even broader categories, two or three that come to mind as you look at the ones that are up there? Do they clump in any way?
You could clump them more personal.
Personal, okay, right there.
And relationship.
Personal and relationship. Okay.
Physical.
Personal relationship. Physical. Another category.
Beyond your control.
Beyond your control. Okay.
This beyond your control would encompass both some of the natural disasters and perhaps the financial ones, wouldn't it? Oh, many of them, yeah.
Any others that may overlap, but that's fine.
I think we could use business as a category.
Business, okay.
Whether you're working for yourself or for someone else.
Okay. Okay, good. I think that's really helpful.
Okay, let's see, I'm going to call it one. This one cuts across several, but I think that's really important to keep in mind. That it makes me think of the serenity prayer, the beyond your control.
I was thinking the relationship one is a separate one from personal.
Okay.
So there's things like financial that would be personal, but there's things like a divorce that would come out of a relationship.
That's helpful.
Okay.
Or even work would be a relationship to somebody's.
Good.
Yes, it's
cut
across a lot.
Yeah. All right.
Okay, this would be called a relationship one, although it's got to be personal.
Okay. Well, it's really interesting when we think about things like this. Let's shift for a little bit and think about some of a kind of a conceptual framework that developed out of some research that was done recently, and maybe have this in the background as we think for a minute about a couple of things, and then we'll be coming back to this. About 3 or 4 years ago, a colleague of mine at St. Olaf, Dr. Bruce Roberts, and I were involved in a project involving 10,000 Lutherans, specifically focusing on Lutherans in congregations, 24 congregations in all, a third of them were urban, a third of them were suburban, and a third of them rural, to try to address the problem of the increase in chemical abuse in our society and the pain associated with chemical abuse. There's probably no one who has not been affected by the problems of chemical abuse. I have an uncle who was killed as a result of intoxication. Wished that there had been an opportunity to be closer to him and have an intervention, but he was living far away and I didn't know him really, but felt the pain. So everybody probably has felt that in some way or another. So it was not simply an academic interest in this issue that made this topic an important one. Through support from then the American Lutheran Church and through the Department of Health and Human Services and a major grant from the National Institute on Drug Abuse, we did some work with church congregations and learned an incredible amount about many, many things. Over the course of the project, which was a 4-year project, we learned a great deal by listening to people. It was a research project that involved what you would expect in terms of measurement and statistics and experimental design and all of those things, but it also involved a component that we called an informal portrait, which was a kind of a listening methodology of talking with people and listening to them about what was going on in their congregations, what was going on in their lives. And this included pastors, it included parish workers, it included directors of Christian education, and included organists, deacons, trustees, congregation members, regular attenders, those who came every 2 years, people in the town, hundreds of people, and over the course of this project, became more and more aware of the phenomenal resource that persons in pain, which includes all of us at different times and differing amounts, are for one another. And that conclusion, which was really profound, was shown both in the numbers and also in the informal portrait, the conversations with people. One of the major findings from that project was that for people who invest themselves in their community by sharing of their vulnerability, sharing of themselves, what's going on in their lives, are an incredible resource for their community in helping to give permission to others to share what's going on in their life in turn. I think of a farmer in the western part of Minnesota who stood up at a meeting, and it was held in a high school cafeteria. It was one of these cafeterias where the tables fold up and go up against a wall. You know, those kind of, they come down like this, and you all sit like this on these little round things that are around the table. And we were all sitting there, and this fellow stood up. I'll never forget it. And it was a community in which there hadn't been much talking about issues of chemical abuse or anything. In fact, one person said part of the piety around here is that you don't talk about anything that's wrong or in your life that you're feeling pain about, that you don't share anything that hurts. And this fellow stood up and he said, in this meeting where we're just having a conversation about the project, you all know me, and he told his name. And everybody kind of looked at him. He said, I'd like to tell you my story. And that was one of the many times that that code phrase came up where people said something where it meant something special. We had heard it a number of times from our friends in AA groups and Al-Anon and Alateen, and we knew that there was something going to happen. This was a Kairos time. Something was special was going to happen. And he said, you know, last summer when I was on vacation for that 6 to 8 week period, people kind of went, yeah, so what? And he said, I wasn't on vacation. I was at Hazelden going through treatment. And people kind of went, whoa, what is this? And then he went on to tell a little bit about what had been going on in his life and what had been going on in his family. And he said, the reason I'm telling you this, he said, is not because I'm speaking for anybody else. I'm not speaking for AA, I'm not speaking for Hazelden. I'm speaking for myself because it's part of my ongoing health, he said. So I'm telling you this story because it's important for me to find my voice and to tell my story. At coffee break, he sat down. At coffee break, he was over by the side of the coffee urn, and there were the sugar cookies and the molasses cookies and the chocolate chip cookies all laid out. And people were coming over to him and nodding their head. Well, lots of conversations started happening, and people were buzzing off in a corner. One of the people in that community said later it was like a positive prairie fire that happened in that community. And of course, the prairie fire is a very, very vivid image from that part of the prairie country. Something starts and then burns out in a ring. And the positive prairie fire was that people's lives were affected by the honesty, by the openness, by the sharing of the life story of this one man. Conceptual framework. What did we find? In the project with 10,000 people, one of the largest field research experiments ever conducted in this country, we found that investment in community consisted of four major variables. For people who were invested in their community, there were specific benefits. I think it probably would be helpful for us just to mention those benefits. I wonder if there's a place we could maybe jot them down even on the bottom of it. Maybe, Jewel? Maybe right down here, I think. That people who were invested in their community had less chemical abuse, including less chemical use.
For people who were invested in their community, there was greater trust in interaction with others. For people who were invested in their community, there was less distress to the stressors of life. We've named a number of the stressors in life. There was less distress to these stressors. Some of these things you can't control. But what was affected is how we felt about those stressors. There was more risk-taking in the sense of initiating contacts with others. The kind of thing that people are doing at Holden all the time. They're going up to people and saying, hi, I'm so-and-so, you know, hi. Establishing a connection and making a connection. It's action. It's putting into practice a caring community.
How would you define community when you're saying invested in community? What are you saying, in the town, in the congregation?
Oh, that's really helpful.
What community are you?
Okay. Community in the sense of people who have a journey, who are journeying together. It partly is the physical geographic community, but it's also a sense of belongingness with one another. It's not enmeshment so that people don't have an individual identity. In fact, it's their uniqueness that helps to contribute partly to this community. So sense of community, sense of bonding, sense that we share what happens to you is not exactly the same thing. If something happens to you, it isn't happening to me exactly, although I may feel something about what's happening to you. If you have a success in community, we rejoice over that. If you're feeling some pain, we all are affected by that pain. A death affects a large community. So that kind of sense of community.
So you didn't try to define that,
right?
Nor did you ask people what they understood that to be.
We did get some measures of community, but it might be helpful at this point to talk for a minute about thoughts that people have about what community means to you, or a thought on that. John, did you?
We've been having an ongoing discussion for the last 10 years. Several families moved into town. Husband works in town. Wife really would rather not live in a small town. She likes big cities. And one was wife is extremely resentful of small town life. So we keep talking about this. And some of these things, it seems to me, would be reflected a little bit in the natural rhythms of small town life and rural congregations near small towns. But I wonder, are there levels of this so you could come into my congregation and say, okay, you're not as much of a community in this sense as you ought to be, but you're a lot better off, say, than St. John's by the Gasworks in some other community. Is there some way to tell where we are?
Love it. Perhaps just tell a brief story of some of the findings and that might speak to that, John. This investment in community is really a concept, but it's made up of four very concrete features. A way to think about those is to think about a metaphor. I think one of the exciting things about Norma Jean Stroman's presentations has been her use of image and metaphor. That's so powerful. I'll never forget the cup with the crack out of it. It's a powerful image, so thanks for that. That's helpful, Norma Jean. And a metaphor that we found helpful in some of the writings which we've been doing in academic journals as well as in materials for congregational use is to think of a flower as a metaphor for ourselves. One person in our congregation said, you know, we're really more like flowers than we are like stones or rocks. And we said, well, what do you mean? And they said, well, stones just kind of lie there and knock against each other and make each other round. Flowers are fragile and have sort of a lifetime, and then they're gone, and they can be hurt easily. So in a sense, we are like wildflowers. Each of us is different. Each of us is unique, and we all need each other just like the wildflowers need each other. Well, if one thinks about a wildflower, for example, and if we say that
each of us is like a wildflower. The four variables that made up the investment and community factor were these. The first is naming. For people who were able to name people in their congregation, whether it was urban, suburban, or rural, those people were more invested in their community. The more people that they knew, the more people they could name, the healthier they were in terms of less distress, less chemical abuse, more trust, more risk-taking relationships. The more people one could name, call by name. Well, why would that be the case? Well, the second variable really says something about that. If we're able to name someone, we're able to bring them to mind and picture them. It's hard to bring someone to mind who doesn't have a name. It's hard to bring them to mind and care about them, because if we don't know their name, we probably don't know very much else either. And so it's hard for us to, in a sense, to care for one another. So the second variable was caring. The third was skills for linking up with one another, the kind of skills that we all have in coming to Holden. And that's a skill, to know about Holden, to get here, to get together, to participate, and to be able to be waitering together, and to be on dish team together, and how to get along with other people. Those are really helpful skills, because during the time that people are waitering, if that's a word, people are talking with each other and are sharing things that are going on in their lives. And when people are working, building a sidewalk, there's conversation going on, the kinds of things we've been doing when we've been hiking and all those. So naming others, the more we can name others, the more names we know. The evidence, the numbers are so strong, you hardly need to do a statistical test with them, but the analyses also show that contributes to investment in community. Caring about what happens to another, both in terms of the joys and the sorrows, that kind of investment in another is healthier for the person who cares as well as for the person cared for. Linking up with others to give and receive support, knowing how to do that is good for the person who's doing the linking as well as for the person who is linked. The fourth one was a bit of a surprise to us, and that was that when you ask somebody, it was a surprise because the psychological research literature didn't ever talk about this. It isn't really a surprise, I think, in our understanding of life in our congregations and our life together, or our experience. But that is, when you ask another to help, you have given that other the gift of your own need. When you ask another to help you, if I ask Julie to help me, because I'm frustrated about how my work is going, or because I'm frustrated about how something went in interacting with one of our children. And if I ask Julie to help me with that, I receive help, but also Julie sees that I need her, and the same works the other way around. When she asks me, I feel like I'm really needed. And so asking another for help is to give them the gift of our vulnerability. And that's not very common in a society where to be strong and tough and not need anybody else is prized officially in so many ways. To be strong by being vulnerable is not very common. There were some good examples this afternoon, again in Norma Jean Stroman's presentation and involvement with the others, of the power of someone else being able to be vulnerable, and the permission it gives to others to be vulnerable as well. Well, in a sense, if this seed is the seed of our story, of telling about our experience, it sprouts and is fed by being able to name and care and link and ask others for help. Here's our story, a blossom, a flower. It takes root in our own experiences. Those experiences are sometimes happy, sometimes sad, sometimes they're all of these things that we've listed on the previous page and more. And we all have a story to tell, every one of us, and every day is a new page. We each have a story to tell. And our story is different from somebody else's story, because somebody else's story is rooted in some of different experiences. all of us sitting around the same fireplace here in the Koinonia room have different experiences, and so the people we will name will be different than the people that someone else might name. The people we care about and we bring to mind right now as the people we really care about are all different people. Some of them are the same, but there are many, many different ones. The different kinds of skills that we have for linking up with others to give and receive support are different. And the way in which we ask others to help will be very different. Consequently, the kind of story that we have to tell of our experience will look different from the story that someone else has, because it's rooted in different experiences. But there's something very powerful that can happen when people do share their stories. Again, these results, this is a result of something called a factor analysis. The investment community has four parts: naming, caring, linking, and asking. Well, why did that seem to be true in the study? This is all kind of conceptual background while we're, and then we're going to be moving into sharing with one another in a little bit. It brings to mind a common metaphor, an image from our experience where we have two people standing in the middle of their backyards, big backyards. They're so far away from the fence that runs around each of their backyards that it's hard to even see each other, much less talk to one another. And we know what happens when neighbors get together, they talk across the back fence. It's only when you move to the edge of your own yard that you have the opportunity of meeting someone who's moving to the edge of their backyard too. The metaphor here is that it's only when we move to the edge of our experience, where we may not be quite as sure about what is ours and what is certain, that we will meet someone else and maybe there find a partner and a friend. The two drawings here, the circle above, the two circles above with people, stick figures standing in the middle, and then the two circles with dashed lines down below represent people who are becoming open to the meeting of others, increasing the risk-taking of establishing a relationship with the other. There are a lot of edges in our society, and it's that are occurring in disconnections between people across edges of age, young, old, male, female, different races, economic edges, different kinds of experience. But oftentimes when people are able to move to the edge of their experience, they will find someone on the other side of their boundary who may have a similar story, and in sharing the stories, there will be empowerment of both persons.
One thing that I thought of along the way here about crisis is that in Chinese it takes two characters to make up the word crisis, and one of those characters alone means danger and the other one means hidden opportunity. And as Scott Peck says in his book on community making and in A Different Drum, and I think many of us in our sessions are talking about community making, community building, you know, how do we get there, the development of the self, the dealing with death issues, the sharing together. As Peck says, a sign of a healthy life isn't the absence of crisis, but rather how early in life we have met crises psychologically and come through them. And we're talking here about the need for other people in terms of this sharing and to basically survive hard times and crises.
There's another metaphor that really comes to mind, Julie, on that from these mountains and these hiking paths around here. One person who is in one of the teams in the congregations working in this, what was called the Bottled Pain Project, a term suggested by one of the members from the congregation, saying that chemical abuse and its issues are like bottled pain. which need to be unbottled and released so that they can be dealt with. We will simply call Jerry to respect him and his name. Jerry was a businessman, a very successful businessman, had a lot of money, and was beginning to do very, very well. He also had some friends who said that he drank too much, but he knew that he could always handle it because he never remembered any of the things that people said that he'd been doing. And Jerry began to have some concerns about the faithfulness of his wife. And so in his thinking process, his thought that the solution would be to buy a gun and to take this gun, attach a string to it, and hide it behind the vent over the refrigerator with the gun hanging down the vent and just a string attached to the vent so that if he ever needed the gun, he would be able to go and get the gun. And he was telling this story, and this is now several years after his beginning recovery. And he said that one night his wife was at a church meeting, he thought, and all of a sudden thought that probably wasn't where she was, so he got the gun. And of course he said he'd had several drinks to get his courage up even before he got the gun, and he headed out the door. Well, his wife came home in the meantime and saw the vent cover off and saw the bottles there and was concerned to call the police. And the police arrested him. He had the gun in the car, loaded in the front seat, .357 Magnum, and was placed in treatment. Afterwards, he was reflecting on this and he said, I was doing crazy things. He said, I was doing things that I didn't know that I was doing, that people said I was doing. My wife, he said, told me that I was throwing up on the floor. He said, and I never saw anything on the floor. Well, his wife, Lucille, and she's given her permission for her name to be used, said that she'd cleaned it up, and she was cleaning it up all the time. Well, afterwards, Jerry and Lucille and several other members of this church congregation who had, in place of the sermon one Sunday morning, decided to tell their stories of different kinds of pain and crisis in their lives and what they'd been through. Most of them in this particular team had had some experience with chemical abuse issues, either a parent or themselves or a child or a spouse. And they stood up on the Sunday morning and they told their stories. And Jerry was saying, he said, you know, I'd like to say now that after several years that I never ever had any problems in life, that everything is always smooth. But he said, it's not always smooth. But he said, with the grace of God, and he said, with the support of Lucille and with other people in the community, he doesn't have to feel as though he's alone in his crisis. Well, the idea that life is not always smooth reminds me of the hike up to Heart Lake that the Strawmans and Julie and I took the other night, or the other day, a Sunday it was. And there are certain, when you get up to Heart Lake and then you climb up toward the waterfall, there's a spot that's pretty rocky. And the trail has been going pretty smooth, and all of a sudden, if you want to go up and sit by the waterfall, you have to go through some really rocky stuff. And it's really helpful to be able to walk with somebody rather than feeling like you're the only one walking through those heavy rocks. And it reminded me of Jerry's story in the congregation when he said, life is not always smooth. It's kind of like a path, and here we've got a sketch of people at two different times walking up a mountain, and it's not as though life is a mountain to climb, because we go up and then we come down and we go over and we sometimes go up and sometimes go down, but sometimes we run into rock slides, and there are things that happen in life that we can't plan on. One person said to us, you know, life is what happens to you when you're planning other things. And sometimes like rock slides. Well, we oftentimes walk by ourselves in life, but something special happens when we encounter a crisis. It sometimes is the case that a crisis is the time of kairos, the time of opportunity, when we are opened to talking and sharing our experience with another person. Now, why is that helpful? What did we find in the bottled pain project that was helpful? Well, first of all, people felt not alone. They felt as though there were other people who were sharing the same kinds of stories that they were from their life. But there are also skills. There are also things that people have found have worked and have been helpful for them when they were going through these crises, things that they can share with others. And we do this when we talk with friends. But we can also share things that we wish that people would have done, or that would have been done more, or that we might have done ourselves, or had an opportunity to do, or resources that we've heard about, support groups that are available for working together in formal ways. In the church congregation, we ask the question in a series of ways, what is it about a church congregation that helps people to invest in the community? And there was one thing that emerged like fluorescent lights flashing against a dark sky. I don't know if fluorescent lights are the image I'd like to use, but something really bright flashing against the dark sky, and that was informal activity together. Informal activity together. That's coffee between services. That's before the softball game. It's talking with other people in a book discussion group. It's what goes on before or after a committee meeting. In this informal time together, people learn each other's names. In the informal time together, people learn about what's going on in others' lives. There's story sharing going on. In informal activity, people link up with others to give and receive support, the kind of thing that happens when we're waiting in line for a meal here at Holden Village, or when we're on the hiking trail. And during informal activity, people have an opportunity to ask one another for help. Well, the results are very strong, and these curves that I've drawn here as a hike up the mountain are actually graphic material, numbers that actually show the relationship between social support and sharing life story with one another. But what we'd like to do is to do some sharing of life story and invite you to think about, and then we'll reflect a little bit. First thing we'd like to do, so we get a chance to do a little bit of talking, is ask you, if you just turn to a person near you that you don't know real well, tell them your name and tell them something about yourself, whatever you want to, for just about a minute. If you do that now, just find somebody that you...
What about the listening skills? Wait for that.
Yeah, I'm reading a lot of books.
Suggested that we, and not just refer to, but review the active listening skills. So, way that you lean forward a little bit shows interest in another person and good eye contact, paraphrasing something of what another person is saying, and then asking open questions, ones that can't just be answered by yes or no. And we would like to be now looking at this list we all put together of the various stresses in life. Maybe quickly clumping them into these different areas, and
how would it be if we call different parts of the room sort of different categories? Like if we call that area of the room sort of personal, and of course these overlap, so you don't have to feel like you have to be in one of these areas. But this is personal, and then call that. Relationships, and that, call this area over here physical issues, and call this business over here, and then look at these issues and think about what would be an issue that you might be willing to say something about to another person, about an issue that for you is real, either from this list or some other issue of crisis and hard times that you've experienced that you'd be willing to share with another as a gift of your life experience, as part of your story, and with the other person then also being willing to share of themselves something about their life experience. The agenda here is not for the listener to fix the person who is sharing their story, nor is it to analyze the story. The agenda is to help the person keep telling their story. And so the active listening skills of posture, eye contact, paraphrasing, and asking open questions, for example, could you say more about that? Would be an example of an open question. Another example of an open question would be, could you give me an example of that? So a person is helped to continue talking and elaborating their story. A closed question was, did you like that? Yes, no. Those are showstoppers. Conversation, boom, just goes down like that. Good radio and television interviewers use open questions so that there's a chance, there's permission for ownership on the part of the story sharer to tell more about what they would like to tell. It's important, I think, for us to review maybe just a bit about boundaries.
Just that to share is being vulnerable. And some of you may know each other very well, some of you may not have met before. And just as we need to respect other people's readiness to share whatever they want, we also need to be aware that in some groups, in some situations, it's not appropriate to share the thing that's most deeply on our mind. That has to be something that's built up over a period of time. I'm very aware of that working with adolescents who've experienced abuse and a lot of other hardships. So use good common sense as well as some risk-taking if it seems appropriate. We only have about 2 minutes for each person to do some sharing and then flipping of roles. We spent a lot of time on conceptual framework, I think, tonight.
Okay. If you would sort of find an area of the room that sort of fits what the issue is that you might be willing to share something about, with that being personal, that being relationship, that being physical, and that being business, whatever those words would mean to you, and then form pairs. It's important to form pairs tonight rather than trios so that there's airtime for each person. In a trio, it can work fine if there's plenty of time for it to go all the way around, but it'll be important tonight for there to be airtime. So if you get to a part of the room and you find that there's an uneven number, maybe try to form a partnership with somebody in another part of the room that you see is still trying to find a partner, or that you can spot together that you could form a partnership. So, and if there is an odd number of people or an uneven number of people, then we could make a three-person group if that has to be. But I think it'd be best if you could have two. So, you willing to try that?
Sure.
Kind of crisis of hard time. Yes.
I'm just going to say it's too short a time. Yeah. Too short. Very frustrated doing this now because I think I've always been very open to my friends and I've always gotten great support and everything and I got a good partner and all that, but it's just too short to
Absolutely. Talk
about in-depth things.
Yeah.
You just sum it up in 1 minute. It's just impossible.
Yeah.
You know?
I think
really hard, Pam. That's right.
Yes.
Well, I can say in general that I was telling him that I'm very vulnerable usually. I mean, I talk pretty much about, you know, things going on in my life, also with strangers. And I think that at one point, I feel that I have to, I can be very open, but at the same time, I detach myself. And that's, you know, it reminds me of what the person was talking about tonight, about the girl going to Guatemala. I mean, you feel the pain and yet, you know, there's something there that makes you detached so much. And the thing, on the one hand, you look for compassion, you know, everyone looks for compassion when, you know, you talk to somebody, a friend or a stranger, whatever, yet at the same time, no one can take the pain away from you. So you are stuck and I I don't know how to resolve that. I mean, it's an ongoing thing, and it's in everybody's life.
That the pain is still your own, even though you're talking with someone else, and that...
But that's not a justification for me, you see? I mean, when people say, well, it's your problem, or, you know, I cannot do anything for you, you have to deal with it, it's okay, but I think that, you know, people should be more loving, more giving, more compassionate as a whole.
What kind of response would be more helpful?
Well, for instance, what you were saying before about the eye contact and everything, I have a hard time dealing with this type of things because maybe because culturally I'm, you know, I feel, you know, I need more like even physical touching or something like that. I mean, really hug or, you know, kiss or whatever. And but even that, you know, sometimes doesn't make any difference. So, I mean, it's a big contradiction. On the one hand, to look for help, and I think I'm open to that, and I ask for help. At the same time, I realize that I have to deal with my problems on my own, and try to strike a balance and see how it works better, you know, works better one way or another in different times, in different situations.
Yeah, I agree.
Mm-hmm. Andy, do you have a thought on that?
Just that I think it is a balance between... At times you draw strength from community, and yet at the same time you're definitely an individual within that community. And I think that's, it's the individuality that you can offer to others possibly. But at the same time, it's your own, you have certain resources that will help you deal with problems on your own at times, or, you know, and at other times you'll need the community. So.
And that it's a mix of self time and community time.
Yeah, definitely. Well, kind of like being at Holden, I think there's definitely an emphasis on community and also solitude. I mean, that's been mentioned here since I've been here.
That's thoughtful.
Mm-hmm.
That's a good point, I think, to which to pull it together, and also because the bell for Vespers is ringing. our session tomorrow at the same time is going to be on story sharing in regard to sexuality and relationships. And I plan one focus on nurturing healthy attitudes in ourselves and also especially with children on sexuality. That will be one piece of it. So thanks for coming.
Thank you very much.